Welcome to another episode of Reading the Bible Responsibly. For the next few episodes, we're going to talk about the book of Jonah. It's a pretty short book. It's only 4 chapters, and we're going to use it as an example of how to move through a book of the Bible and read it more responsibly. So these episodes are going to be a little more off the cuff and a little less scripted than some of the other ones. And I'm just going to kind of show you my process of working through one of these books and seeing what we might learn from it and trying to get the correct, responsible lessons from this book. You know, the book of Jonah is probably best known as a kid's story. We've done it at our church as a VBS, and we had a lot of fun with it. But there's a lot to unpack in these 4 short chapters. So we'll use the book of Jonah as just an example to move through as grown-ups reading this and see how to read responsibly. The main thing I want you to know is that Jonah has 4 chapters, but we often read it as though it only has 2. We stop with Jonah getting vomited out of the belly of the fish, and the message, we think, is something about running away from God's call for our lives and how God will catch up with us anyway. But to read responsibly, we need to read Jonah all the way through the end of chapter 4, because if we do that, we'll find out why Jonah was running, and I actually think that's the main point of the book. Just a quick warning, there's going to be a brief mention and discussion of suicide as we go through Jonah 1. So I just want you to be aware of that content as we move through in the next section. So you're ready to get going with Jonah? Let's go. Okay, 2 quick notes about the book before we get into the actual text. The 2 tools I recommend for people so often as they try to read more responsibly is to look at the genre. So what kind of writing is this? And context. Where is it fit within the rest of the Bible? The genre of Jonah, what kind of writing it is prophecy, sort of. But there's a whole lot of narrative. There's a lot of story here. It's told in the third person. It's not as though Jonah is writing this himself. Now, maybe he did, but what I'm saying is that there's not the I did this. It's he, Jonah. And many of the prophetic books, they're written in the first person. So Isaiah will say I, and Jeremiah will say I. So yes, Jonah belongs in the books of prophecy, but it's a little bit different than others. Some have even pointed out that Jonah, more than the other prophetic books, reads sort of like a parable. But we'll probably save that discussion for another time. And then the second tool, context. Where does Jonah fit within the rest of the Bible? Jonah is considered one of the minor prophets. It's not because his message is less important. It's simply because of the length. That's a shorter book. And those shorter prophetic books are called the minor prophets. As far as the date, when this is going on, if this Jonah is the one mentioned in 2 Kings, then these events are happening in about the middle of the 8th century BCE. This is when Nineveh and the Empire of Assyria were really a huge threat. And in the book of Jonah, they really do loom large as this big evil empire that Jonah wants nothing to do with. A quick note about the name Jonah. So the name Jonah in Hebrew means dove, which is the national symbol for Israel. And it's pretty evident that Jonah's attitude is representative of the wider attitude of all Israel toward outsiders. Okay, now let's get into the text itself. The word of the Lord comes to Jonah, and in verse 2, he's told to get up and go to Nineveh. Now, your translation might not include get up, but it's there. And I want you to start paying attention to all the up and down here, because I think the writer here is almost painting a picture of Jonah's descent into the deep. So God tells him to get up and go to Nineveh, which would have been east, and Jonah heads west. He goes to the port city of Joppa, and he's headed the direct opposite way God tells him to go. So it's almost comically bad actions here. What does he do in verse 3? He goes down to Joppa. So God says, get up and go. He goes down to Joppa. Keep watching for that word down. Then the storm comes up, sent by God. And it's so bad that the ship is almost going to break up. The sailors are freaking out. They're crying out to their own gods. I want you to notice, too, the journey of the sailors. Right here, they're crying out to their own gods. Pay attention to where they are at the end of this chapter as far as which god they're crying out to. So they cry out to their gods, but they're going to take practical steps. They're going to throw cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. They think the problem is there's too much weight aboard. Let's get rid of some of this. Where's Jonah in all this? He's down. He's gone below deck. He's down there. He's laying down, and he is asleep. The captain goes and says, hey, how are you sleeping? Go call on your god. Maybe your god can do something about this. Our gods don't seem to be doing anything. Maybe your God will do something about this. Doesn't seem to help. The sailors say, let's cast lots. So they're essentially rolling dice. Hey, let's figure out who's the problem here. Because cargo's not helping. We've unloaded a lot of that. Who's the culprit? So Jonah is the guilty party. And they say, hey, who's the problem here? Who's responsible for this? Who are you? And what kind of work are you in? And where's your country? And who's your people? They're, at this point, probably regretting taking on this passenger. Jonah says, I'm a Hebrew. I worship Yahweh, the God of heaven, who made the sea and land. And they are not expecting this reaction or this response because they're afraid, verse 10. And they say, what have you done? So at this point, they're realizing, okay, Jonah's the problem. And I guess from a previous conversation, the author here tells us, they know he's running away from Yahweh because he told him. Meantime, nothing's getting better with this storm. The sea's getting rougher and rougher, verse 11. So they say, hey, what should we do to you to make the sea calm? So they thought they could do something to the cargo, but now they say, what should we do to you? And Jonah then says, pick me up and throw me into the sea, and it will become calm. It's my fault that this storm has come upon you. So Jonah's redeeming himself a little bit here by taking responsibility, and he's going to make a sacrifice. This is essentially a suicide wish. At this point, Jonah has no reason to believe he's going to be saved. He's basically asking them to kill him, which is a very difficult spot, obviously, for him to be in at this point, but he's going to sacrifice himself in order to save them. But even then, these honorable sailors won't do it. They must think, if this is the solution, we're not doing it. So they try to row back to land, but the storm's even worse, and they can't even do that. So look at verse 14. They cried out to the Lord. That's Yahweh. Please, Yahweh, do not let us die for taking this man's life. So interestingly, they start out crying out to their own God, but because of Jonah, they're actually talking to Yahweh. In an odd turn of events, Jonah's behavior and disobedience has been sort of a form of evangelism, because now you've got a bunch of sailors who are crying out to Yahweh and saying, hey, please do something about this. This guy's made you angry, but don't hold us accountable for that. That's almost like their prayer of penance. Then they take Jonah, they throw him overboard, and immediately the sea grows calm. And this causes the sailors to even fear Yahweh and offer a sacrifice and make vows to him. And the chapter ends by saying Yahweh provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Can we just say something about the huge fish thing? Like, I grew up with people saying it's a fish, not a whale, and they made a big deal out of it. And of course, we want to be accurate with the text, but what we have to realize is that there's no really good Hebrew word to say whale. So fish could mean whale. If you're a writer of this period in history, if you're going to talk about a whale, probably the best way to say it would be huge fish. But man, to get hung up over fish versus whale, I think is to just get lost in the details of the story. And it doesn't make a difference in the message. So, of course, I want to be accurate and treat the text responsibly. I just don't think this is the thing to worry that much about. You're also probably picking up on some parallels with Jesus in this story. You've got a story about a person sleeping through a storm who's called upon to fix it. And you got a person who's got 3 days and three nights in the darkness. So just a summary of Jonah chapter 1 so far. A man named Dove is told to go one way, and he goes the opposite in disobedience to God. He's told to get up, but he instead goes down, down, down until he's below sea and down in the fish's belly. Now, why would Jonah choose this over just doing what he was told? Why was he so opposed to going to preach to the Ninevites? Well, we're going to study more about the Ninevites and the big bad empire of Assyria in a future episode in this series. But for the very next episode, well, we're going to take a look at Jonah, the composer. Thanks for listening. I hope you're going to enjoy this tour through Jonah. I really like this book. I think it's a great quick dive into reading scripture responsibly. It's a fun, interesting story. So stay tuned, stick with me for this series, and we'll see you next time.